before we go into Rachel's presentation, I was going to ask Jeff Mansfield, who is new to the room, to do about 1 or 2 minutes on himself, and then we come across to you. Is that okay?
Perfect.
Jack?
Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. My name is Jack Mansfield. I'm here doing some work with the taxonomy team in the consultancy role.
Is that better? I'm here in a consultancy role with the taxonomy team. Just a bit of background about myself. I'm a UK chartered accountant by background, and I've worked as a finance director as well. So I've witnessed the pressures on the commercial side. But for the last quite a few number of years, I've been working at Companies House, the UK Public Register, where over the last 5 or 6 years, I was responsible for their digital reporting initiative on XBRL. So I've been working with inline XBRL for some time and working with the trials and tribulations of new jurisdictions coming on board with that. So hopefully I can make a contribution here, and I'm enjoying myself and looking forward to meeting you all today.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Rachel.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. What I'm going to do briefly over the next about 25-30 minutes is to give you an update on our better communication work, of which, of course, the taxonomy is a particular area. And I'll give you a little bit of update on all of the areas of the better communication, but I will spend a little bit more time talking about the taxonomy activities and what the team have been doing since the last ITCG meeting. So perhaps you can move to the next slide, to slide number 3, please, Vlade. Thank you. Now, I updated you at the last meeting about the better communication theme, which is going to be a central theme of the board's work over the next 5 years. This was in response to our gender consultation, which highlighted the communication of information within financial statements as being an important thing that the board should be looking at. The general idea we heard from the agenda consultation was that much of the recognition and measurement requirements in IFRS are looking good, and we don't need to introduce any new major recognition and measurement standards. But what we should do is focus on the communication of the information within the financial statements, so looking at presentation and disclosure requirements, and indeed how the content is delivered. As a result, the better communication theme was put together, and it has 3 main areas. The first 2 areas on the slides focus on the content and organisation of the content within the financial statements, and that's the disclosure initiative and the primary financial statements project. And then, of course, we have the IFRS taxonomy, which, of course, very much looks at the content delivery. So if we could move on to the next slide, and what I'll do is just talk a little bit more about the disclosure initiative and the work that we're doing here. The disclosure initiative has been underway for a number of years. It's not a new initiative, and it was introduced in response to concerns that some people raised about disclosures in financial statements, and some people talked about there being a disclosure problem. And when looking at the disclosure problem, people have identified 3 main areas and 3 main targets of that disclosure problem. Firstly, that there is not enough relevant information in the financial statements, so users complain that they cannot always find the information that they would find most useful in the financial statements. Secondly, and you hear this largely from preparers, that there is too much irrelevant information in financial statements, so they would talk about a disclosure overload in the financial statements, and say we should look at reducing the information that is not necessarily useful to users when making their investment decisions. And then finally, we have complaints about the presentation of the information in the financial statements, so that the information is not clearly communicated. Of course, in an ideal world, the financial statements should be a communication exercise between the investors and the preparers of the financial statements. And a lot of companies do take that approach to the financial statements, but unfortunately, there are a lot of companies out there who really do just look at the financial statements as a compliance exercise and do not look at the best ways of actually communicating the information. So the disclosure initiative was put together to try and address those 3 areas of what people identified as the disclosure problem. I haven't finished on the spot.
Sorry.
Thank you. we've got a number of completed projects which we're looking at making some amendments to IS1 to enable people to make judgments about the sort of information that they put in financial statements, and also some amendments to our statement on cash flows. Then also have a number of materiality implementation projects that are underway. Materiality is really important to the disclosure problem because materiality tells you which information you should be putting in the financial statements. It's all about what information is relevant, what information is useful to the users of the financial statements. So we think providing a little bit more guidance about materiality will help people to identify what information is useful. To help them do that, we're about to publish a materiality practice statement which provides guidance to preparers of financial statements on how to make materiality judgments. We're also going to make some clarifying amendments to the definition of materiality. Those amendments to the definition of materiality are being exposed in an exposure draft which will be issued at the same time as the materiality practice statement. The intention of those changes is not to change the definition of materiality, but really to move some of the guidance that currently is in one of our standards into the actual definition itself, which will hopefully make it clearer what information should be material and should be included in the financial statements. We then have two research projects under the Disclosure Initiative, the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper, which sets out principles about what information should be included in the financial statements and how that should be communicated. And then we have a research project on a standards level review of disclosures, which will look at whether and how we actually draft our disclosure requirements and whether there are any amendments to the disclosure requirements and existing standards that we could make. The scope of that standards level review will very much depend upon the feedback that we receive from the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper. If we could move on. Thank you. So I briefly touched on the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper and said that it suggests some principles to make disclosures in the financial statements more effective. It has a comment period of 6 months. We issued it back on the 2nd of October, and so we're asking, back in March, so we're asking for comments by the 2nd of October. We'd be particularly interested in hearing from this group whether you think there are implications of digital reporting for the principles that we're talking about and considering the impact of XBRL or any other technologies on the principles that we set out within that document. If we could move on to the contents of the discussion paper is sort of outlined on this slide. We start off by trying to describe some principles of effective communication in preparing financial statements. A lot of these are very much common sense, talking about using clear and concise language and avoiding duplication, appropriate use of cross-references, etc. We thought it would be useful to set these out and potentially put these in a standard so that people have these common sense principles in front of them when preparing their financial statements, and so ensure that they think about how to communicate effectively rather than just compliance with the standards. We then had principles on where to disclose information within the document, so talking about the roles of the primary financial statements versus the notes to the financial statements, and talking about the primary financial statements have more prominence than the notes and therefore may have a slightly different role to the notes to the financial statements. Again, we'd be particularly interested in hearing about the electronic reporting implications of that discussion, because clearly that changes the way in which people consume information. But we've still heard evidence that whether you're consuming the information electronically or whether you're consuming the information in a traditional report, that whether it's in the primary financial statements or the notes can still make a difference to the way in which that information is received and the attention that it gets. We also have a discussion about location of information, and again, that electronic reporting could have implications for that discussion about location. We then move on to talk about principles to address some specific disclosure concerns of users of financial statements. One area that has of course, got a lot of attention in recent months is the issue of performance measures, and in particular alternative performance measures, and we discussed how entities could go about presenting those in a fair and balanced way and potentially including those within the financial statements. We also have some discussion of disclosure of accounting policies and the most effective way of disclosing those policies and which policies should be disclosed. The final section of the discussion paper sets out principles for improving disclosure objectives and requirements, and we talk about how we could go about developing centralised disclosure objectives, which would hopefully provide more targeted information in the financial statements. So preparers, when putting together the financial statements, can understand why they're disclosing a particular piece of information and whether A, that piece of information is necessary to meet the disclosure objective, and B, whether actually additional information beyond what's specifically required by the standards should be provided in order to meet that overall disclosure objective. We also have some discussion about how the board drafts its disclosure requirements and whether there are improvements that we could make to the way in which we draft those disclosure requirements. We can move on now, Vladek. Thank you. So that was the disclosure initiative with an overview of the most recently published document, the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper. But the other major project within the Better Communication theme is our project on primary financial statements. And this is looking at the primary financial statements, so effectively looking at the statement of financial performance, so profit or loss and other comprehensive income, the statement of cash flows, statement of financial position, and the statement of changes in equity. The focus of this project is going to be very much upon targeted improvements to those statements, and in particular having a focus on how we actually present financial performance within the financial statements. Now, as part of this project, we're not looking in detail at the statement of financial position, so the balance sheet, because what we've heard from users is that they are largely content with the way in which information in the balance sheet is presented. And we're also not looking at the statement of changes in equity as part of this project, because we have a separate project on financial instruments with the characteristics of equity, which will look in a little bit more detail about how information is presented in the statement of changes in equity, so it will be dealt with in a separate project. So our major focus is on the statement of financial performance and the statement of cash flows. A statement of financial performance, we'll be looking at some additional required subtotals within the financial statements, for example, requiring an additional EBIT subtotal. We'll be providing guidance on, or exploring whether we should require or provide guidance on management performance measures, and including a management performance measure subtotal within the financial statement. We may also look at alternative EPS figures and provide some guidance around that, and also look at better ways of communicating other comprehensive income. Also, as part of that project, we might look at doing something that the board has never really done before, which is perhaps to look at developing templates for the primary financial statements. So developing a template for the statement of financial performance, statement of financial position, and statement of cash flows. Now, clearly that would require us to actually get into industry-specific guidance, because a single template is not going to work for all industries. And the question is whether we could cover most of the sort of common reporting practice with a small number of templates. For example, it's been suggested if we develop templates for corporates, for financial institutions, for insurers, and for investment property companies, we might actually cover quite a lot of the existing reporting practice. But this is quite a new area, and we'd be very interested in feedback on whether people think this is actually a good idea. Part of the drive behind this idea of templates, I think, is very much the electronic reporting, where there's been some suggestion that more structure than we currently have within the IFRS financial statements may actually facilitate the electronic reporting. The other area we might touch in is greater disaggregation of information within the financial statements, because one of the things that a lot of users of financial statements tell us that they hate is massive other categories within the financial statements. So you would have other current assets with no real disaggregation, which frankly they found quite useless information. So the question is, should we have guidance on greater disaggregation? We may also touch on the statement of cash flows, but that's going to be very much trying to align the statement of cash flows with the statement of financial performance changes that we make and make sure that they're consistent and they stack up. So that's the primary financial statements project, if we could move on. I'm going to talk in a little bit more detail about what we were trying to do there. So comparability versus flexibility is the big tension that we're trying to resolve in the primary financial statements project. Some people say that actually we need greater comparability in the financial statements, particularly in the primary financial statements, whereas others tell us, no, we want more flexibility, we don't want too much structure there. So what we're trying to do as part of this project is to try and balance those competing demands from different stakeholders in financial reporting. If we could move on to the next slide. This sets out one of the ideas that we've had to try and address those competing objectives, which is that we could achieve them by having a very well-defined and comparable subtotal within the statement of financial performance, for example, an EBIT subtotal, but then allowing people flexibility to define their own management performance measure, which they would then provide additional disclosures around to help people reconcile that management performance measure to the other subtotals within the financial statements. So this is one of the areas that we explored with the board in March. They were broadly supportive of these ideas, and we're looking at them in a little bit more detail at the June board meeting. So that's the activities that we have been doing in the sort of other parts of the Better Communication Initiative, but what I'd now like to do is to focus on what's important to us today, which is the IFRS taxonomy activities, and what the team has been doing since the last meeting. We've been focusing on four main areas: content development, improved quality of data tagging, this idea of making structured electronic reporting work within a principle-based reporting, which of course is what IFRS is, and then our support for regulators in terms of the implementation of the IFRS taxonomy. Let's have a look at content. Most of this will be familiar to you, so I'll go through it fairly quickly. We had a final update for the amendments to IFRS 4, which dealt with how to apply IFRS 9 and IFRS 4 insurance contracts together, and that was published back in quarter 4 of 2016. And we have, of course, issued a proposed update to IFRS 7 insurance contracts, and that coincided with the publication of the insurance contract standard, and that was back in quarter 2 of this year. Next slide. Looking a little bit more detail at IFRS 17 insurance contracts, this had very significant presentation and disclosure requirement changes arising from this new standard. As a result, it sees a significant number of new elements added to the IFRS taxonomy to deal with those new disclosure requirements, with 287 new elements and broken down as set out on the slide. We've got 15 new tables which can employ between 1 to 4 axes, and there are more than 400 lines in the presentation link base. So from all of that, you can see it's a pretty significant change to the taxonomy, resulting from a pretty significant change to the presentation and disclosure requirements for entities that have insurance contracts. We published IFRS taxonomy update on the same day that we published the IFRS 17 revised standard. That required a significant effort from the team to get that together, particularly with all the publication requirements that we have around the standard itself. So it's a big sort of congratulations to the team for getting that out at the same time as the update. As you know, we agreed as part of our revised due process that we would try and get the updates out at the same time or shortly after the revised standards, and this was the first big standard in which we had to try that new process. There were teething problems, inevitably. I think we realised that it's actually an extremely big job to try and get something as large as the changes to the insurance contracts out at the same time as the standard itself, but we did achieve it in the end. We've got a comment period of 120 days, which is slightly longer than normal for a proposed taxonomy update, but that reflects the fact that these changes are more significant than we would normally see, and it was in result of a request from board members to extend it to give people more opportunity to actually comment on the document. We'd very much like you to comment on the proposed taxonomy update and to provide us with feedback on it. It has changed since the review version that was sent round. I don't think the changes are that significant, but there have been changes, so we would like you to look at it and it would encourage you to comment on it. And, of course, as we always say, we would really like you to submit comment letters if you possibly can, because that gives us the transparency within our due process that we would like to be there. Next slide, please. Just give you a little bit of an overview of what's coming up over the next few months. We have a number of things coming out, but with all of them, I suspect they will have only very limited, if any, effect upon the IFRS taxonomy, because they don't impact the presentation and disclosure requirements. So I don't propose to go into this slide in any detail. We could move on. We have common practice projects, of course, still ongoing. We received two comment letters on the proposed taxonomy update, common practice for agriculture, leisure, franchises, retail and financial institutions. And we discussed those changes with the IFRS taxonomy review panel, and as a result of the discussions with the review panel, made a number of amendments to the proposals that were in the proposed taxonomy update, and then finalised the common practice in that area. We're also working on a common practice project on IFRS 13, fair value measurement. This reflects a new approach that we're trialling to the common practice projects, whereby we're trying to align the common practice reviews with the post-implementation reviews that we do of new standards. So whenever we issue a new standard, a few years after it's been implemented, we review the standard to see if it's working in the way in which the board intended it to work. We thought it made sense to align the common practice reviews for those new standards with that post-implementation review, because we think that both the post-implementation review could benefit from the common practice review and the common practice review could benefit from the post-implementation review. So this is the first time we're doing it, IFRS 13 fair value measurement, and we're currently reviewing the analysis that we've undertaken in terms of common practice on IFRS 13 fair value measurement. We have, of course, as always, looked to try and respond to external feedback that we've received, and this summarises the sorts of feedback that we've received on the taxonomy and what we've done in response to that feedback. I would reiterate that feedback from people about proposed taxonomy updates, both in terms of common practice and the standards themselves, is really important to us. It's in order to be able to ensure that the taxonomy does properly reflect the requirements of the standards and properly reflect common practice. So please do provide us with feedback, and we do respond to that feedback, and we do look to try and make sure it's as good as it can be. We've also been doing quite a lot of work in terms of trying to improve the quality of the information coming out of the IFRS taxonomy, and in particular we've been looking at a number of initiatives to support preparers in the use of the IFRS taxonomy. We're looking at some educational materials, and in particular a preparer's guide, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on today, to see whether that actually is going to be useful to the preparers and whether the content of that preparer's guide is appropriate or whether we're missing something within that preparer's guide. We're also proposing to add implementation notes to a limited number of elements, and again we're going to discuss that as part of this meeting. And element references, we've done some work on element references to ensure that all taxonomy elements have a reference to an IFRS standard rather than just to implementation guidance, so that we can ensure that there is appropriate references to what we call Part A of the IFRS standards rather than the supporting materials which are included in Part B of the standards. And this just explains the approach that we're taking in terms of providing those references to Part A in a little bit more detail. We've also been doing a lot of work to try and support regulators in their implementation efforts for the IFRS taxonomy, and we're going to hear from Michael and Mike a little bit later on today, in fact I think immediately after this session, about the work that they're doing in terms of implementation of the IFRS taxonomy. And we've been doing work to try and support not only Michael and Michael but any other regulators out there who are looking to use the IFRS taxonomy. We've been having regular meetings to discuss issues and we're looking to participate in workshops and a possible involvement in ESMA field testing as when you decide on that. We also have introduced new terms and conditions which we discussed with you for the IFRS taxonomy, and that's those new terms and conditions are now up on the website. This slide here just summarises the support that we're giving in terms of translations for regulators. And as you can see, we have quite a lot of work in progress in terms of the 2017 taxonomy and translations of that taxonomy into a number of different languages. And then just going on to principle-based reporting, the biggest area here is, of course, around entity-specific disclosures. Entity-specific disclosures are a big feature of principles-based reporting because, of course, if you have principles, you do not have disclosure requirements for every single thing that an entity would like to disclose. So it's important that entity-specific disclosures are properly catered for within the taxonomy. And we've been doing work with XBRL International on entity-specific disclosures to try and ensure that there are mechanisms to facilitate the entity-specific the reporting of entity-specific data. We've also got our primary financial statements project, which, as I've already touched on, is looking at providing more structure in the primary financial statements and even potentially going as far as providing templates, which, again, may help facilitate some of the electronic reporting. As we've already touched on, we're working with ESMA and the SEC and other regulators on good electronic reporting and what the principles of good electronic reporting should be. Which I think finishes by a brief roundup of what we're doing in better communication and roundup of what the taxonomy team has been doing since the last meeting. I'll just pause there and see if there are any questions or comments from any members.
Rachel, in terms of the ITCG, the feedback you're looking for is in the form of comment letters, and it's associated with the discussion paper principles and the taxonomy update.
That's right.
That's the feedback you're looking from this group here.
Yeah. I mean, we do, you know, if you would rather give us informal feedback rather than writing a comment letter, then that's fine. We would much prefer it, though, if you did write a comment letter, because then that's publicly available and gives us that increased transparency so that people can see that we are following a proper due process and that any comments that we receive in, we can deal with appropriately. But so, yes, if you can write comment letters, that's preferable for us.
And the discussion paper is September.
October 2nd for the discussion paper.
In September for the taxonomy update.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, good. Thank you. I think there's just clarification. On slide 21, element references, it says starting from the IFRS taxonomy 2017, each element has a direct reference to the IFRS standards. Does that include common reporting practice elements?
Bartek, it does. Yes. Does. Yeah.
And you're distinguishing those, though, right? You have a different role for common reporting practice, so you can tell which is which, right?
Yes. So our common practice elements, they have references to the standards. Sometimes they're very general. Sometimes they're detailed. So for classes of property, plant, equipment, the standards says these are the classes. So we list we reference to that paragraph. Sometimes we reference to a paragraph that says an entity shall disclose additional information. And all our references are either disclosure, example, or common practice. So you can see by the reference that even though it goes... 10 a.m. fire drill. So even though they go to the standard, you can actually read that they are common practice references, yes. Michael.
The question on these template considerations for the IFRS statements, how advanced is this discussion currently in the organization? Particularly, I'm asking in reference to last week there was a conference at the European Central Bank where certain banks were asking in the context of ESMA project about the possibility to match to the already existing FinRep reporting for credit institutions according to IFRSs, which is very template driven. So how advanced is this discussion currently here? How would you?
It's still at a very early stage. Primary Financial Statements Project is a research project. The first output of that research would be a discussion paper. After a discussion paper, if people thought it was a good idea to develop these templates, we'd then be looking at the actual sort of, you know, what should they look like, what would be included, which would then be exposed in an exposure draft, and then we get to a final standard. So it's going to be several years, I think, before you would actually see those templates coming through.
Chi.
So can I ask you about the page 7, the principal on, the outline of discussion paper. In this case, you say that principal of where to disclose information. In that case, the role of the primary financial statement and the notes. Is that meaning about the your current discussion about the relation between role of the primary financial statement and notes? If so, do you have any example? What kind of cases are you particularly discussing?
We do have a discussion about the different roles of the primary financial statements and the notes. It is quite a high-level discussion, so it's looking at the principles that we're looking at rather than looking at specific details. But it talks about the idea that the primary financial statements are effectively a structured summary of the recognised elements within the financial statements, and that the primary financial statements tend to have more prominence than the information within the notes to the financial statements. And so when deciding whether you put something in the primaries or the notes, you need to take into account the fact that information in the primaries probably have more prominence. We then talk about the role of the notes as being to support the primary financial statements and to provide additional analysis of the amounts included in the primary financial statements and any unrecognized elements. So it is very much at a sort of high level principles basis rather than any sort of particular detail about what particular types of information should be in one versus the other.
Michael,
you have a question? Yeah, you mentioned before these templates, and the idea of these templates is to give suggestions and examples how the primary financial statements could look like, or would it be that these templates should be followed?
I think that would be an open question that we would ask as part of the discussion paper. Do we make these templates mandatory, or do we make them advisory, if you like? My personal view is it would be very difficult to make them required, but that's my personal view.
Part of the primary financial statement project is the templates. Another part is just recasting, so to speak, the financial statements using EBIT and such. That creates a lot of changes in the financials, potentially, which is a lot of changes in the taxonomy, of course. Kind of the same question as Michal had was, is that 2 years off? It's more than 2 years, probably, right?
Yes, it is. I think we'd be looking at probably about 5 years minimum before we would get finalized changes.
Okay, that's it's a while.
I think so the template is very important to you guys, right?
Yes, I think it's extremely important. I mean, I even wonder is XBRL driving some of that, but we don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I have the same question you have, is it mandatory or not? Which seems like it can't be mandatory to do that, but that would be a big change in finance reporting, plus a big change in digital XBRL type reporting for the good, but as you know, it's not easy.
I think that's it.